Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for August 8, 2017. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please read the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Hanford, Rasmussen, Davis, Camp, and Gamble.
Thank you. I received word earlier this evening that Councilmember Cuttaback would be late. She anticipates being here around 7:30 and we'll go ahead and announce for the record when she comes in. Councilmember Hanford is listed as the Pledge of Allegiance. I've already spoken with Councilmember Hanford about Ethan Ness from Troop 154, who's here this evening to lead us. Mr. Ness, will you come forward to the podium and lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is under public hearing. This is public hearing number one. It's AB 17-123, resolution number 018-2017, declaring certain property as surplus and authorizing its disposition, water, sewer, parks, facilities, emergency management, operations and maintenance, and fleet equipment. And Mr. Roberts, is Mr. Roberts here? Okay, Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As we are cleaning things up, anticipation of the remote workshop coming, and also just the normal vehicle placement schedules that we have. The items on the attachment A are things that are either obsolete or no longer and since they were some of the purchases of utility monies and other funding sources required by state law to have all the hearings regarding the surplus of those properties prior to or trading them in. So, citizens' opportunity to make comments on actually the proposed resolution.
Okay, thank you. Council members, are there any questions? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up the public testimony portion of this public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the council this evening on this resolution? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, council. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis to close the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. And with that said, please let the record show that Councilmember Cuttaback came into chambers at 7:02, which is why the votes have been 7-0, even though she was not here at roll call. So, welcome. We'll let the record show that Councilmember Cuttaback is in chambers. All right. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to approve resolution number 018-2017 declaring certain real property a surplus and authorizing its disposition, water, sewer, parks, facilities, emergency management, operations and maintenance, and fleet equipment.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action that is identified as C in agenda bill number 17-123 as it is printed. All those in favor, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is also under public hearing. This is public hearing number two. This is AB 17-124, ordinance number 019-2017, amending MMC 20.10, park impact fees, first reading. And this is Mr. Swanson from Community Development. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Mayor. Staff is proposing to amend the MMC 2010 the park impact fees. What happened when the city adopted the comprehensive plan and fees resolution, everything was amended at that time to reflect what the city currently charges for impact fees. However, the municipal code that also lists out those fees was in the business during those amendments. So this is essentially a housekeeping item to bring everything into performance with the world. Plan. And I also attached the methodology back in 2015
Thank you very much. Council members, are there any questions? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up the public testimony portion of this public hearing. Is there anybody here that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council and offer public testimony on Agenda Bill number 17-124? Okay, anybody at all? Seeing none, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to close public hearing.
Second.
I have a motion to close the public hearing from Councilmember Rasmussen with a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Ben, I'm sorry, I did have a question. It talked about the gross demand in 2035 was 107.92 acres. What do we currently have? Do you know?
I don't. I didn't dive into the comment here.
Okay.
Just have the numbers for five. That just went in to find out exactly what those numbers were. Provide documentation.
Of what it was. Okay. I was just wondering how close we were on the baseline.
I can definitely look into that.
And just don't waste your time.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to waste. And then I just want to make sure, because when I read through this, I was confused because it said it was no impact on the current charges, but then you provided this memorandum of how it was determined. This is just based on what was, as you said, what was in the comp plan.
Correct. It was in the comp plan.
Okay.
So essentially, these fees are located in three spots. It's in the comp plan, the establishment methodology or fees resolution.
Right.
Which is basically what most developers and staff go to.
And those are in, those are the same. It was just not in the code.
And,
okay.
And
okay. That was it.
Well,
thanks.
Sure.
All right, Council, is there a motion? Councilmember Davis.
Sure, I'll move to accept this first reading, ordinance number 019-2017, amending MMC 20.10.070A, park impact fee for each development activity on which an impact fee is imposed.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Davis, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action C as typed in Agenda Bill number 17-124. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda this evening is announcements and presentations. We are going to go with now with announcements and presentations, item number one. This is a presentation from the Snohomish Conservation District 5-year plan rate and charges proposal. Mr. Marty. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you very much for having me here. So on your table in front of you is a pamphlet, and I'm going to go ahead and do a presentation as well.
Councilmember Scarborough, we have a seat available over here where Mr. Lell usually sits. If you'd like, please come on over and join us.
Once again, I'm Monte Marty of the Snohomish Conservation District, district manager there since 2010. Prior to that time, I served on our board of supervisors, which is our policy board, for 25 years. So I have a very long-standing relationship with the district, both as a volunteer and now as staff. So this proposal and this presentation will be to walk you through our rate proposal. It'll give you a little history also about who we are and what we do. So first off, we were established in 1941, so we have over 75 years of service here in Snohomish County. We're one of 45 conservation districts across the state, one of over 3,000 across the U.S. Most were established back in the 40s as part of a response to the Dust Bowl era, and hence the early pictures that we had to come back in the good old days. So who are we? So, as I said before, we have a five-person policy board that volunteers and sets our policy. We as staff implement that policy on a day in, day out basis. Very similar to you, our five-person policy board sets that direction, and then staff implements that on a day in, day out basis. So we have professionals. Most of our staff have degrees, bachelor's, master's degrees, and our scientists and practitioners in the field. People that come and work for the Conservation District have a passion for the work that we do. A highly passionate crew of people. We're stewards, so we work with private landowners. So the Conservation District has no regulatory power, and we work with landowners on a voluntary basis. So everything that we do is non-regulatory and voluntary in nature. So if there are people that wish for us not to work with them, then we don't work with them. If there are people that wish to work with us, then we work with them. A lot of people like to work with us because of our non-regulatory powers or duties. So we're not coming in with any kind of regulatory pressure. It's purely on a voluntary, non-regulatory basis. And so we have stewards, and we're stewards ourselves, as well as the board members or people in the community like yourselves. They're also stewards of the land and water and resources. Yeah. We are community engagers, so what we do is on a day-in, day-out basis, we're engaging with the public. Whether it be residential folks here in Monroe, or people out in the county, wherever they may be. Once again, everything's on a voluntary basis, and all of our services are free. So state law, RCW 8908, does not allow us to charge for services. We are supposed to provide those services free of charge to anybody that asks for those services. But that's our job, and we love to engage with our communities, whether it be homeowners, like in this situation, or farmers, or tribes, or cities, or whomever we may have an opportunity to partner with and engage with at the community level. We are educators, and this is a big program here in Monroe. We work with Vince in your public works department to help roll out our youth education program. Your teachers here in the Monroe School District, Sky Valley Educational Center, they come to our plant sale every year on Fridays to help do our plant sale out at the fairgrounds. We are constantly in the school. So if you look, in the handout that we have here, you can see the numbers that we have for the city of Monroe. 49 lessons, over 2,000 contact hours, 3 field trips, 55 adult chaperones. It's a big piece of what we do throughout the county, but here in Monroe specifically. We're planners, both locally and regionally. So we have farm planners, we have stormwater planners, we have people that work with habitat, a wide variety of functions that we provide. We do that both locally as well as regionally. Snohomish Conservation District is looked at as one of the leaders in the state. We're being asked constantly to engage with the Puget Sound Partnership, with tribes, with the Department of Ecology, with Department of Natural Resources, with our city partners, etc., to engage in our planning activities, whether it be things that we're doing or, like in the case of City Monroe, working with you on your goals and things that you have, and how can we help and support your activities. And to go off that, we're partners. And we, I can tell a story, but it would take too long. But it's ingrained in our DNA. Ever since I started with the Conservation District in 1983, that's what we've done. It started with us working with EPA to work. 319 funds going to the Department of Ecology, going to Snohomish County, coming to the Conservation District to help support our programs. And then we're working with private landowners. And it is how we leverage, and you'll see later, and you can see in the brochure, that we leverage every dollar, and the way we do that is being an effective partner. Cities, county, private landowners, other agencies, NGOs, it's a big piece of who we are and what we do. You are welcome to answer, ask any questions along the way, by the way, just let me know. So in your little one pager here, I'm just going to highlight some of the things that we've done within the city of Monroe. We worked with the Aldenbrough Homeowners Association a couple years ago. They had some issues with their stormwater after the development went in. We came in, helped them address some of their stormwater issues, and then also brought kids from local schools out to do some planting. But it was an extensive partnership that we had with the city, but then also with the Homeowners Association there. Wetland restoration. So the big wetlands, as you head out of town west by Arco, that's right before you get to Arco, that wetland there. We just last year received some funding from the Department of Ecology in partnership with the city to restore this wetland. And so we're bringing in, that was once again leveraging what we're doing, partnering with the city to do that restoration project out there next to Arco. And then youth education. So I already talked about that, but it's a big and growing piece. Not only with the city of Monroe, but just about every city in Snohomish County we have an interlocal agreement with to provide youth education. A lot of that is base funding from Snohomish County, from water management. And then the cities also contribute, as well as the district contributes to that youth education. Basically, the way we're rolling it out is any school, anybody, any teacher that wants us to come into their classroom here, regardless of where they're at in Snohomish County, we're there to serve them. And because of our partners with cities, our own internal funding, and the funding of Snohomish County allows that to happen. Protecting lake tide. So I know that Vince has been working with our stormwater engineer on some work. I was just informed about this today, so I don't know much about this other than that we're working with Vince and the surface water management team to see and begin to seek out what are some things we can do to improve water quality and function of lake tide. Don't ask me any questions about that, because I don't know. But I was informed that that's what's going on. So, the rate proposal, let's dive into that. So currently we have an assessment, a $5 a parcel, 5 cents an acre. An assessment in state law is flat, $5 per parcel and 5 cents per acre for every parcel, irregardless of type of parcel. What we're proposing to do is to go to a rate structure, which is more legally defensible. So in our state law, it allows us to do either one. We did an assessment to begin with because it was legal. There had been a lawsuit down in King County, Pierce County, County because they had a zero per acre, and that caused some trouble in how that assessment was viewed. And so then in state law they created the rank structure. So we're just choosing now to migrate from that assessment to that rate structure. That's one of the changes. And then the other change is we're looking to increase it from $5 a parcel to maximum of $10 a parcel. Some will not be $10, no, actually, it will tell you what those uses are. And then also 10 cents an acre, but not everybody has 10 cents an acre. So that's the proposal I just talked about. So moving from an assessment to a rate structure, and then increasing from $5 for every parcel to a maximum of $10 per parcel. And then just also state law caps at $10 a person. We can't go above $10 a person or $10.50. So that's the new rate structure that we're proposing. So you can see here's the calculated rate, the per parcel rate. Here's the per acre rate, maximum of 10. Some are less than 10. Less than 10. This one's forest land cap out at $3 a parcel. And so, and 1 cent an acre. So that's what goes back. Here's the number of parcels, number of acres, and the revenue that's tied to the asset. I'm going to stop there. That's at the heart of, there's more, I have a few more slides, but before I go any further, I wanted to see if there was any questions.
So I do have one question. Number three, land use category, transportation, just to confirm. Transportation there, are you talking about like park and rides and things like that? Or are you talking about road right-of-way like streets?
Yeah, it's on a parcel basis.
Yep, I just want to verify. Yeah. Right. Okay.
So that's another thing is we worked with a rate consultant to do all of this. They took our budget and work plan and created the rate structure. So they went through all the various land use types and lumped them into these categories.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I'm not seeing it in your literature, but I saw Forterra mentioned on a sign. I'm assuming you're working with Forterra in all of this.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're one of our partners. They're fully aware. So that slide that you presenting the picture that you saw was a farm outside of Arlington, between Island Crossing and Arlington, that was going to be developed. We were one of the partners that came in to help fund stripping those development rights and limiting that development and turning that back into farms.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Does recreational include parks?
If they have a parcel ID.
Okay. Thank you, that's all right.
Mr. Farrell, just to confirm, our parks have parcel IDs.
Okay.
Thank you. So that would include our parks here. Okay. Well, thank you.
Depending where it is.
With some exceptions, potentially. Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
When's the last time you did an increase?
Yeah, so we had, in 2009,
okay.
County Council approved our existing rate structure, existing assessment, and that was for 5 years, and then they reauthorized it again in 2014.
Okay.
And so there has been no increase. That's one of the issues that we're struggling with.
Okay.
Is we have not had an increase, and this is, this is our base funding that we're able to use and to leverage to get other grants. And so it's, so we're tapped out, per se, relative to our ability to go out and secure additional money.
So what is your budget per year? Is it this $13.7 million, or is that a multi-year
budget?
No,
that's a multi-year.
So okay.
Current budget is around $4 million.
Okay. And, it looks like in here, I just got this tonight, but it looks like there's been substantial increase in what you've been able to do over the last, since 2009. So asking for the increase, what have you not been able to do? I mean, because it looks like you've made some really good gains in the last 6 years. So now you're asking for, it's going from 5 to 10. For what? Like, what have you not been able to do that you're going to be able to do with this new money?
Can we hold that question?
Sure.
Because this is the next one.
Okay. So I'm ahead of the game.
Yeah.
You're always ahead of the game.
I have to say that to myself. Okay.
Councilmembers, sounds like we're going to wait on this. Does anybody else have any other questions up to this point in the presentation? Okay, of course, we can come back to it. Please go ahead and continue.
Okay.
Thank you.
So this is just a picture of the rate area. green for the Stoke Washington Water District is outlined because this increase for the Stoke Washington Water District is going to be an increase of from 0 to 10 max, because we currently have in the Stoke Washington Water District, we had until about a month or so ago, funding from Snohomish County and the Stillington Water District, dedicated funding, 8.5% of those funds. The county has consolidated into one rate area, so that direct funding was eliminated. So this will replace that funding. Doesn't impact you guys. Okay, so increased needs for investments. Why? Right, to answer your question. So just increased pressure on our natural resources. So we're facing more requests than what we can supply. We anticipate that there's going to be increasing pressure on us to provide services as population continues to increase, both within the urban growth areas as well as out in Snohomish County. And so that's one reason why. And this pressure on natural resources is multifaceted. I sit on what's called Sustainable Land Strategy, and it's a group of people trying to work through the conflicts that have arisen between the salmon community and the ag community, or the estuary and other places. And there's just an increased awareness that natural resources impact what's going on in our environment. And so, because we have that linkage and that tie and easy access to private landowners because of our non-regulatory voluntary approach, we're being asked to engage with private landowners more and more and more, day in and day out, either directly from them or through our partners. One. Another is urban stormwater and redwater. So, stormwater is a big issue. You guys know that. It's a big issue. We have a lot of old developments. You guys have been doing a great job, streets and just a number of other things that you're able to do on the public right way. But there's a lot also that still needs to be done on private land, in the city, outside the city, as it relates to urban stormwater. We have the ability and the opportunity to engage with private landowners on private land to address some of those issues where the water starts is on their property. Before it gets to the public, right, before it gets to the street, or it gets into your stormwater system. So that's a huge piece that we're being asked to engage with. We go back to the regional piece. We're engaging in this conversation across the Puget Sound because of our stormwater program has been very effective at this already, but there's going to be the need for more. And then ag engagement. Going back to what I was talking about relative to salmon recovery, Puget Sound recovery, there's a lot of ag land and ag producers out there that are a target, for lack of a better word, some for good reason, and a lot for not good reason. But they have access to land that's cheap, inexpensive, and accessible. And so there's opportunities for us to engage with them to make them part of these conversations, right? They have, just like you, they have day jobs. And people get together at the county, at the state, conservation district, and have meetings that talk about private landowners and what we're going to do on ag land. And they need to be part of that conversation. It's hard for them to do that. So we need to meet them where they're at. Evening meetings, small group meetings, selecting times for them to be able to come off the farm into meetings during the day. This is a complex issue that's not easy, but if we want to be successful with sound recovery, Puget Sound recovery, all of the things that we're asking agriculture producers to help address, then we have got to engage them more effectively and more comprehensively. And then the youth education. Is there needs to have huge demand for our youth education. There's also a desire to get more kids out into the field. There's a desire to educate all of our kids about the value of agriculture and the importance of agriculture. You know, Monroe is surrounded by agricultural land. They're a vital part of your community. They may be out in the county where these lands are, but they're a vital part of Monroe. And so this youth education piece is another area where just people are asking us for more. We need to be able to provide that. And then just more projects on the ground. It'll give us money to get more on-the-ground projects in two ways, directly through the assessment, or the rate, excuse me, but also in leveraging. So, as an example, leveraging our funding to do a Monroe Weather Fund, leveraging our funding to work with, you know, Work Open out in Walco Valley. Getting, you know, leveraging our funding to do something potentially with Lake Tahoe and wherever, whatever those things may be, is leveraging those dollars. So here's the leveraging piece, right? And so it's been about $1 million a year that we've gotten from the assessment, so 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14. So about $7 million in assessment money has been leveraged to this. We've been very successful, and even in a tough grant environment, we are constantly being asked to apply for grants because of the effectiveness of our programs. That's my city programming, so once again, we work with every city to make sure that what we're doing is consistent with your plan. That's what's important to us. We're not going to come in and try to do something in the city unless it's consistent with what you guys want to do in Monroe. So we'll work with Vince, whoever you wish for us to work with, to engage with. Deborah Knight, as an example, we've worked with her extensively. I'm in Stanwood. I've already talked with her and looking to hopefully engage and continue to engage with her here at the City of Monroe. And once again, I want to emphasize it's really customized, which is not efficient for us. I'll admit, it's not efficient for us to customize, but that's the most effective way for us to be effective in each city.
Mr. Marty, Councilmember Kemp has a question.
Yes.
Councilmember Kemp.
Dave. When you say customized city programming, are you talking, you're directed by the city to look at certain things, or would you come in and do a review and look for issues that we may want to pay attention to?
I guess two things. Both. So the answer is both.
Okay.
Give you a
short, that's a short answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
So where we really want to come in and work with Vince in service water management or whoever it is that we should be working with to say, okay, what are the things that you're working on that you need our help with? So one of the things that Vince has talked to us about is the youth education. Really wants us to come in and do a lot of youth education. He's talking to us about Lake Tahoe.
Right.
We, you know, we talked about the Monroe Weather. We've done some stuff. And then kind of also, right, to kind of get to your second point, is we've worked with the City of Monroe, we've worked with the City of Lake Stevens, Snohomish, No Creek, on coming in and Sandwood, coming in and looking for opportunities. And so we'll come in and maybe assess an area to try to identify opportunities, then go out and try to seek funding, grant funding, to implement those projects.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So something really proud about, we had state auditor's office in our office for 3 weeks, first 3 weeks of last November. At the end of that audit, we received an outstanding stewardship of public resources from the state auditors. First Coast Conservation District had a first of its kind, so we were extremely proud of that recognition that we got. And so we do care about every penny that we collect. It's important to us. That came through loud and clear with the state auditor's office built in there. We were open to finding new ways and better ways of doing business. Saying, hey, is this right? Is this wrong? Always seeking better ways of making sure that we're stewarding the public funds. So that's And then we have our board, but then we also have advisory boards, and they're constantly trying to engage with the public on making sure that what we're doing and services that we're providing are consistent with what our partners need, whether it be Quarterra, whether it be cities, and what our landowners need. So, so we're just here to inform. And answer any other questions that you may have concerning our rate proposal.
Thank you. Council members, do you have any questions about the rate proposal? Under what authority is the rate proposal approved?
Yes. So RCW 8908 lines out exactly what we need to do. We have filed with the county council back in June our rate proposal. This rate proposal has been provided to the county council. County council staff is working on ordinances. We'll be working with the county council to get it on the calendar and moving it through the county council process. So the county council will be the entity that approves this rate proposal.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Does this effectively double whatever we're paying now? Is it something we get?
To clarify, this only applies to property that was not already subdivided or that was still in that was outside of city limits in 1941. Is that correct? And this would the impact of this would be to double on a parcel by parcel basis, and also to increase by that that 10 cents per acre. Correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so it would double, and also for your house, because you were located outside of city limits, yes, you'd be paying it. Back in 1941. Yeah.
We're in the city limits, but that's...
Yeah, well, today you are.
Yeah, Monroe, like some other cities, is unique. So, you guys are here, right?
Yes.
So, the green, inside the green there, that's the city boundary, that's 1941. So those that are inside the green do not pay.
Currently?
Currently.
Okay. And
they will not pay in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
And so the outside the boundary is still in the city and they are paying.
Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough? Okay. Does any other council members have any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Next item we have on the agenda this evening is announcements and presentations. Item number two, this is a presentation on the 2017 legislative agenda and the 2018 legislative discussion. And I understand that you're going to provide a summary.
I am.
And then discussion.
Councilmembers,
welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight. Cities across the state, and particularly here in Monroe, we had a good session. And especially going in and throughout session, there are a lot of question marks, a lot of concerns. You may recall we had a very large budget challenge going into this session, and We were very concerned about how that may impact city revenues and services that we're providing. Revenues are provided by the state, and services that the city is providing based on those revenues. And we had a, so quickly, we had a Republicans controlled the Senate, 25-24, very close majority, and House controlled by Democrats, very slim majority, 50-48. So everything that had to happen had to be carefully negotiated, which is why it ended up taking three additional special sessions to be able to come to conclusion on the budget. But at the end of the day, we did well, thankfully. Despite the fact that, interesting, because after three additional sessions, after 105 days, three additional sessions, and not coming up with a capital budget, it's kind of a bittersweet, frustrating, disappointing end to the session, but overall, we did well. Real quickly, then, looking at the budgets that did pass, the operating budget was $43.7 billion. That was, about 13% increase. Wouldn't it be nice if all of our cities were seeing a 13% increase every year and every couple of years in our budgets? But there were some demanding services that did. Yeah, 13.5% increase over the state's previous two-year budget. There is, as we know, a lot of that is driven by the Supreme Court decision that requires the state to fulfill its obligation, constitutional obligation, to provide state education. And with that mandate from several years back, we had the state had to come up with the dollars necessary to ensure that it was, if we, the state, was doing our part to fully fund public education. Another key piece of what was driving was the state's employees and being able to fund the increases. As many of you recall, also there are, the governor has the ability to negotiate with the unions. The governor negotiated with the unions, came back with an agreement, and the legislature is required to fund that agreement or come up with a different approach, basically say no, go back to drawing boards. So that was somewhat controversial, but at the end of the day, the legislature once again did end up paying for the state employee pay increases. Mental health and family services were some of the other key issues that needed to be addressed this last time around. And state did step up and make some substantial increases in mental health and also made some big changes on family services, the way that the state provides services for families and children and families. In fact, creating a new, whole new department specifically paid more attention because there were a lot of folks over the year, the last couple of years, felt that the state has fallen down on some agencies. Agencies were falling down. They need to separate that specifically to make sure that proper attention was being given to the state. Specifically for cities, as I mentioned, the state shared revenues were maintained, fully funded, things like liquor revenues and profits. The Municipal Research and Services Center was another one that was on a chopping block. They're very concerned about that was funded. Basic law enforcement academy was also fully funded, and some additional classes were paid for to ensure that our law enforcement new police coming new police officers need some training. And so they have to go through the academy to be able to get trained. And one of the big challenges we're all facing, all of the cities across the state, there aren't enough slots for the new officers coming in. And without that, there's starting to be a backup and delays in being able to train the new officers before they can start providing services. And so, thankfully, you may recall last year, legislature was looking at not funding and making some cutbacks in some of that, requiring cities to pay more to be able to ensure that the academies were even provided. So thankfully, that was another area where the legislature recognized, heard from the cities across the state, from our law enforcement, and recognized that additional funding needed to be provided there. They also stepped up with some additional funding for criminal justice and public defense, which you may recall. Those of you looking at your budgets, you're realizing how much of a challenge and a burden that is constantly placed on the local jurisdictions. To be able to pay for the 13.5% increase, they need to come up with additional revenues. in additional revenues this time around under the state property tax increase, which was offset by putting limits on local school district property tax rates. So, because of the timing of how all this plays out, citizens across the state will see a property tax increase, state increase, basically an increase in their property tax. Of course, most citizens don't pay attention or know or care whether it's a state, county, city, fire districts, school districts, they put it all together and they end up having to pay the bill. And but for those of us that recognize that the majority of the state property taxes is coming from the state and school districts, and very small portions coming from the cities, it is important for us to know that the state, if the citizens of Monroe will see a property tax increase in their taxes next year, but then the limits on school districts will kick in the following year, and different jurisdictions throughout the state will be paying different rates. We'll see different impacts. Here in Monroe, they will likely, for the most part, bring the property, their total property tax burden back to the level that they're paying now, roughly. Should be roughly a wash. You may see a few dollars, a decrease or increase, but for the most part, we're expecting that it will be roughly a decrease back to the amount that they're paying now. Other jurisdictions, for instance, in Seattle and Bellevue, will be seeing a large property tax increase, and that will continue through 3 years to come. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. Another area that...
Just a second, Councilmember Scarborough.
How does that affect the school district? Does that mean they're getting less money? And,
yeah, so,
and are they prepared that that's going to happen?
Yes. Yes and no, I should say. School districts are now calculating the impacts, and so they are aware that their rate is being reduced, but it's being offset by the increased revenues from the state. The state property tax and distributed through schools. Now, different school districts are going to be affected in different ways, and each school district is now in the process of assessing, and some school districts are saying, you know, this is looking pretty good, and we're going to be okay. Other school districts are saying, we're going to be short. So it's going to continue to be an issue. We're likely to see some schools and some interest groups push, potentially take us back to the courts and see additional decisions from the courts as to whether or not the state actually fulfilled its duties to fund fully fund education. So we're not, the question is not entirely answered at this point. The state legislature would contend at this point that, however, that they have done their duty. And now it's going to be up to the courts of the state to determine whether or not that's the case, and the school districts to determine that over the next couple of months, really, going into this next school year, what kind of impact it's going to have on school services.
So in the next couple of months, as we wait for that decision, if the court says that the McCleary has been satisfied, our in contempt court daily fee stops, or is it stopped now? And at that point, what I'm hearing you say is there may be more McCleary-like adjudications against cities, states, school districts, etc.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. That is where we're at this point.
Yeah.
And as far as the assessment that the court has put on the state, remember that was a small amount compared to the total amount of additional funding that the state just allocated, and so it's legislature would contend that they have now paid that piece off, or whatever. That's of course determine whether they're going to continue assessing a fee or if they've done their duty, states other duty to those obligations or not. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions potentially still out there.
Okay.
I think for the most part, most people coming out of the session feel that the answer is yes. So,
okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I have a question about the public defense, the criminal justice, public defense. Ours obviously has increased, you know, in the last year. So,
Dramatically,
yeah. It was saying $900,000 is generated annually from the increase. and now an additional 360 will be allocated. So I'm trying to get a sense of how much is this really coming back to the cities. Doesn't sound like much.
No, it's a very small portion to help cities out. However, the way it's allocated has changed, because most of those dollars were allocated to the county.
Yeah.
And 10% was allocated to the cities. Now it's
50-50.
Yeah, back to a 50-50 split. So it will help as far as offsetting the cost that we as cities have to pick up is very small.
And it says something in here about the City Public Defense Improvement Grant. So is this money we're automatically going to get, or is it money that we have to apply for in a grant? We don't know.
I'm sorry?
As far as how those dollars are allocated, is that just provided on a per city basis, or is it a grant?
No, my understanding is a portion of it comes to the city. Is that right, Becky?
You know, I have to look into that more. I don't remember seeing anything. I get information on the state shared revenues that are activated. I don't remember seeing anything about the public defense.
Ms. Atkinson?
If I could speak towards that, I do the administration of our public defense program.
Yeah.
We have previously applied for this type of grant. It is a grant that you apply for, and there is so much money available. So my understanding of what's happened is that they've allocated more money for this grant program, and also they've allocated more of that money to be able to come to cities. It is still something that you have to apply for.
Okay.
And also, it is a supplemental application. It cannot be used for what you currently provide. So in the past, you've had to actually fill out in your application what new services would be provided by the grant funding that you're requesting. So everything that we currently fund would not qualify, so it does not supplement what you currently are budgeting for.
So it doesn't help with our increased cost. We have to say we're providing more services on top of what we already provide.
That is correct. And if you remember, increased costs are actually just based on our conflicts and our backup attorneys, which actually has been, we've got a couple years of data, and so we're actually kind of normalizing on that. So we're trying to learn from that information as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions at this point?
All right. I have a couple, but the new paid family leave program, do you know what that really is about, or do you have any information on that?
Sure. As far as the in general,
just
or
what it means
on the impact of the cities.
Well, impact it's going to have on employers in our area, and so I'm just curious how that's going to affect businesses in our area. It's something people might ask me, like, it's a new law coming down where they're going to have to provide more benefits. What does that mean for employers?
Yeah, there is going to be an impact on employers in general. And cities being an employer, will also see an impact. And basically, it may be able to answer this.
I couldn't answer the last one. I don't know why I'd be able to.
Short timer.
Liz? No.
Yeah.
In general, the employer is required to pay into a fund, as well as the employee pays into a fund.
Okay.
That then would be utilized at when somebody applies for family leave, needs to take leave, and then the fund is back to the state. So it's basically a new tax. 70% is paid by the employee, 30% by the employer.
Oh.
All right. I have much more information for you to be able to fully answer the question.
Okay. And my next question was about US-2. You might get to that, but I was wondering what the improvements were on US-2.
So for the transportation budget, everybody's good with the operating budget. We can come back to later if necessary. The transportation budget was another big success for us. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute with the allocation for 522. But in general, the transportation budget was the least controversial of the budgets, $7.5 billion. And most of that is going to pay for highway and bridge maintenance and state control and ferry system. And as you may recall,
new dollars, there's very few new dollars for new projects available. Most of it is just for maintaining the system that we currently have. But there were a few dollars, and one thing I did want to highlight is, in particular, 405 and 522, and in addition to 522 widening and the interchange, 405 and 522 is another issue that is of concern to Monroe, because as we have learned or know, we've got our own little bottleneck with the lack of widening on 522 and the interchange. But then, even if we were to solve that problem, we still run into the next problem at 405, and that will interchange. And that is being has been recognized as a major issue that needs to be addressed. The legislature has initially allocated $5 million for studying and funding for preliminary engineering and design work on that interchange, that area, as well as US 2 trestle, another $2.5 million, I think, was allocated to the trestle and again planning. So it's not actual improvements yet on either of those, but it is at least starting to lay the groundwork for both of those areas for the future. So just like we're trying to get dollars for 522 widening for the planning stage for some of the limited planning, there are efforts going on for the planning on those two pieces as well. So when new dollars, when a big package of new revenue is available for new construction, three of these projects are going to be at least considered highly because of the position that we're kind of doing now. In the early stages. Any other questions on the transportation budget? So then on the capital budget, as we all know all too well at this point, no capital budget was adopted yet. In large part, that was even though we had an agreement on a final agreement between the House and the Senate and all the different layers on a capital budget, the Senate was holding firm on their position to ensure that the first decision dealing with water rights and availability and the exempt wells in rural areas needed to be addressed before they would consider a capital budget. While there was a lot of negotiation and a lot of hope for that issue being addressed, and in fact negotiators had agreement a number of times, felt they were close, and when they brought it back to their caucuses for a discussion, they didn't have the votes in their caucuses to be able to move it forward. And so then anytime they had agreements to be able to move forward on first, they fell apart before it was passed, and therefore without it being addressed. The House passed capital budget several times, and the Senate ended up never taking a vote on the final capital budget, so that continues to linger, and that will be an issue throughout the interim and going into next session. There are some possibilities, and there certainly continues to be hope that they will pass a capital budget through a number of different things that are going on and potentially pressure on the Senate to come back and reconvene and pass capital budget. There are continued discussions on the first decision to try and pass that, and there are other issues, for instance, an election, a special election that is in play, that could redetermine the makeup of the legislature and the control of the Senate. And if that were to happen, if that were to change hands, then that might be another thing that could cause the election to come back into session before next year to pass capital budget. At this point, however, we have to assume that there will be no capital budget this time around, this year, and that the legislature will have to come back next year to pass a capital budget where they would normally be making adjustments in the supplemental budget. Instead, they will be passing the initial two-year capital budget during the next session, hopefully. So, all right, any questions on capital budget?
Councilmember Scott-Abeck.
Do you know about how much they're looking at for the capital budget, or?
$3.5 billion.
$3.5 billion, okay. And that looks like that would be what they're going to be voting on.
Yes.
Okay.
So they did have agreement on that. I'm sorry, $2.5 billion, 2 year capital budget. They did have agreement on it. frustrating thing, especially frustrating thing for us,
yeah.
is the late tie.
Yes.
Athletic Fields was funded. It was in the agreed upon capital budget. And so we were all good to go. And had it come up for a vote, we would have had about $800,000 allocated to Lake Tie Athletic Fields. Because they don't have the capital budget, that's in question as to whether or not we're in a good position. We started talking about that during our budget committee tonight as far as our 2018 list of issues. I think we're well positioned to be in the next capital budget, in the capital budget next year. And see, if it does come up this year, I think we're in great shape. If they are to, for whatever reason, reconvene and pass capital budget this year, they pretty much agree upon what they're going to pass. However, going into next session, everything changes, and we're all positioned to be able to hopefully be in it, but they start over again. And there will be a whole bunch of other new requests coming from all around the state, from communities around the state, and additional pressure to on the capital budget. So,
and if they approve it next session, would they be approving a 1 year or a 2 year? Because then it doesn't match up with the budget.
They would be approving a 2 year. Well, it would be the biennial.
They would go back.
So
okay.
It would go, right. It would be back.
They would retro and say we would do all this over the
right.
the 1 year, basically over the 2 year.
So basically, you know, rolling into supplemental budget rather than doing a supplemental budget,
right.
just do a full
okay.
capital budget.
I gotcha.
Or they could. Argument, it would be that they would pass the initial capital budget that's agreed upon
and then do a supplemental
in addition as well. So
right.
we'll have to see how they decide to play that out.
Okay. Do you know how many projects were put in? If they have $2.5 billion, did you know what the ask was?
There's a number of different the way the capital budget is broken down. Another area that we're concerned about particularly is how the trust fund and the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program. The House Trust Fund provides potentially millions of dollars, potentially $100 million or $800 million, I think it was.
But they're not funding that, right?
For affordable housing projects.
Yeah.
Is, right, no funding available for that right now. The Wildlife Recreation Program, a lot of money available, potentially $150 to $100 million allocated to the Washington Wildlife Recreation Program for community projects, a lot of money that mm-hmm. community projects. Lake Tie has received
right.
funding for that in the past, and we're looking at applying for additional money for RCO grants for Lake Tie and other projects around the state, county, and borough. So that's a concern. Now, as far as local community projects like Lake Tie, the competition, there are roughly 50 projects, as I recall, that were in the allocated in this budget, and roughly, I think, $79 million, maybe. So it's somewhere between 70 and 80, roughly, million dollars is allocated to community projects.
I had one more question about the sales, streamlined sales tax.
Yep.
So what it sounds like in here is, so I if I understand it, when that went into play, it hurt the city of Monroe because we had a lot of manufacturing stuff be sold out of our community, and then the tax followed where the product went. But I understand that's strict. So there was some mitigation that was created that then they get back to the city to help us with that issue. And what I read here is it looks like they're going to phase that out.
Yeah, so what they had agreed upon as far as the marketplace fairness this is a very broad topic.
Yeah.
And I'll try and summarize briefly. But absolutely, a number of years ago, the legislature passed adopted the streamlined sales tax, which reallocated how sales tax dollars were allocated throughout the state. Monroe was technically considered one of the losers in that because dollars were allocated to where the
product went.
Yeah, was received rather than where it originated, where it was
right.
sold. And so to help reduce that impact, that negative impact for roughly 80 cities or 20 cities around the state that had a particularly negative impact, like Monroe. There was a, they were subsidized, I guess, by the state, a certain amount of dollars. What the legislature did this year was adopt the next piece of that, which has been kind of, everybody's waiting for Congress to take action. But we know how quick Congress is to act on things. And the state has decided, and there's a couple other states around the country that have also started down this path and are starting to collect sales tax on internet sales. And then distributing that to where the sales take place, where the sales are received. Like who bought, purchased the product or service. And the state is expected to take in additional sales tax revenues. The city is estimated to take in additional revenue. The cities across the state are also going to see an increase in the revenues collected. And because based on the forecasts that DOR has offered, those dollars will offset the need for crediting those communities that were saw a negative impact on reallocation. And so they are planning on phasing that out. But part of the negotiation is that concern that we don't actually know what's going to happen,
right,
and how those dollars are going to be coming in and which cities will see more of an increase. One of the things that we ensured that was in that budget was a line item that the DOR would take another look in a couple of years to see what the actual impact is,
yeah,
before phasing out that promo. It's planned to be phased out over the next 4 to 6 years. It is. We are taking a look at it just to ensure that communities, to see which communities are
okay. So that it would seem like that's something we want, if our city wants to pay attention to,
yes,
and that make sure we're not being negatively impacted.
Yes, we'll want to keep an eye on that and watch the revenues as they come in, see how hopefully an increase. We're hoping for an increase, but as we were talking about during the legislative committee meeting, there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah.
And so we don't know, we just don't know at this point. So the estimates are for an increase in the city, the state and the cities will see an increase, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Okay, very good. So that kind of wraps up the budgets. I think we've covered a couple of our listed priorities already, but just to highlight the successes that we saw this last legislative session, $750,000 was allocated for practical design for 522 widening interchange improvements. That is, as you may recall, we initially were looking for $300,000 for practical design. We were able to get some additional dollars to be able to help with not only practical design, but also to be able to help with potentially matching funds and or immediate improvements. That's one of the things that we're now working with the county and DOT on, is looking at how those dollars are going to be allocated as far as making planning, additional planning efforts, and potentially being able to tap some of those dollars from matching funds with federal grants and other grants, and potentially being able to have immediate impact on some of the projects. We, as you may recall from the presentation earlier, well, I guess it was late last year from DOT to the council, and then earlier this year to the community, talking about the work that we had done last year. There are a couple of ideas that were thrown out as far as how we can make some incremental changes and improvements to 522, including things like the metering, stoplight metering, some additional lanes, turn lanes at 522 interchange, and different things like that. Phasing the projects, the design on the interchange, different things like that are, there are some possibilities for being able to what we might be able to do with these additional dollars for right now. So we're kind of working with our partners in this, our stakeholders, to figure out what the next steps are, and we'll kind of keep everybody informed as we move forward there. The fiscal sustainability, one of the, as we talked about, one of the primary issues was funding for shared revenue streams.
That was maintained. So that was another check off the list for our public records request. I understand Elizabeth has already done the happy dance. We're celebrating the change that authorized us in charge of small fee for providing electronic records. And this hopefully brought to flex. So that is good news that we have. We were able to pass that legislation. We'll be hopefully soon seeing some. I see that coming before the council will be able to consider so that we can help address that challenge you're seeing here in the row and in city structure. Human services, homelessness, affordable housing. The legislature did agree finally to extend the $40 doctor recording fee to fund local homeless programs. And there was also some legislation passed to provide a $6.6 million increase in the allocated towards housing and homelessness services through the state budget, as well as legislation that allows a local REIT to be used for a very limited time for potentially use for homeless programs, for housing programs. So if you're interested in pursuing that, we can talk more about how that is, what the restrictions are on that. It's very tightly used. But there are some additional, there were some steps, but as I say, there were some small steps and a big challenge and a problem that continues. All of our communities throughout the state are continuing to see. So we're going to need to continue looking at that issue and also the capital budget, hoping the capital budget does get passed and provides additional funding for the housing. So, and then another, some more good news real quickly on the infrastructure of public works assistance account. Remember that program, as we were going into the session, was basically dying. They continue to strip the dollars out of the public works assistance account and use that for the budget. And at the same time, we saw the legislators had problems with the way it was administered. And so finally, we're able to, some legislators, I should say. Of course, some of those legislators were in key positions. The House, however, has been strong advocates of public assistance all along, and we were able to find agreement to be able to keep hope alive, really. They made some changes by modifying the board and the way the account is run, and the agreement was while they were stripping, continuing to strip dollars away to fund the budget, as they did again this year, they were planning on funding the project list through bonding in the capital budget. Unfortunately, the capital budget didn't get funded, didn't pass. There were no bonds to be able to pay for the backfill of the project list that was presented. So there's hope and expectation that the home versus assistance capital will remain alive, but there's still that basic funding challenges. So the two that we were not successful with, as I mentioned, we can't let tie up park at left fields. We had agreement, had $800,000 allocated, capital budget didn't pass, so that's still out there. The other one was Main Street program. That was, as you may also recall from the legislative updates, we have the increase in the Senate budget, but not the House budget. And when they ended up negotiating, that was one of the things that fell off. So that continues to be a challenge. We want to see additional funding allocated to the Main Street program. Okay, I know that this has gone on. We can go on. I can go on a lot longer. You guys probably don't need me or want me to go on too much longer at all. But one other issue I did want to highlight for you before we talk about, before we wrap it up, is telecommunications. 5G is coming. And we're all, I love happy dance, we're all doing happy dance, we're all excited about advances in technology that will bring 5G and provide greater service for our mobile phones and the program. The telecommunications industry is making a very hard push to basically provide state preemption to ensure that they have the ability to provide services throughout the state. However, as much as we all support that and want to see that, the cities are in need of providing regulatory oversight of how it's done. And every city has its own method, and that's what the state preemption is going to address, and basically take away the city's ability to determine how those facilities would be established in each of our communities.
And I won't go into too much detail, but it's coming back. And one of the things, and so we'll be working with you guys, and one of the things I've heard is the council will be looking at between now and January is one of the strategies that cities are looking to employ is to come up with model ordinances and try and get as many cities as possible throughout the state to adopt those model ordinances before next session, so that we can go to legislators and say, we're already on top of this, we're already working to ensure that we provide the ability for the telecommunications industry to come in and provide these facilities to improve the service in our communities. We've already addressed this. There's no need for you as the legislature to go preempt the legislation to address this issue statewide. So that's something that this AWC and a lot of other cities are looking to do, and so bring this to your attention and give you the opportunity to look into it as well. If you're interested in pursuing it, I'd be happy to provide, make sure that you've got the model provisions that are out there that you're looking at, and give you the opportunity to address this as well.
Our city administrator will have staff look into that. Thank you.
Yes, very good. So, very quickly, next steps. We've already started discussion today with the legislative committee, getting a late start because of the long legislative session, but finally getting started on looking at our legislative issues for next session. We'll continue that discussion for the next couple of months. We'll be bringing recommendations to the council as a whole within hopefully a couple of months. And then be able to start sharing that with our legislative delegation. We'll continue working with the mayor and legislative committee, and we'll be reaching out to our delegation to talk about those legislative priorities, as well as working with other stakeholders like the county and DOT and others to be able to help move our legislative agenda in the future. So, there was my report. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. If you have any additional questions, I'm happy to answer.
All right. Thank you very much for everything that you've done this session, and I don't see any questions, so thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
But the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. Ms. Atkinson is checking to see if anybody's signed in. Thank you. Mr. Marty. Oh, just your presentation. Okay. Is there anybody that would like to come up to speak to the City Council this evening on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to approve the consent agenda as listed.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to approve the consent agenda as written. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Next item on the agenda is new business item number one. This is AB 17-126, authorize the mayor to sign consultant agreement for Unified Development Regulations Project. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you very much. So after the adoption of the 2015 comprehensive plan, Mayor, former Community Development Director, requested the council approve $100,000 for the essentially ensuring compliance with the adopted comprehensive plan and major replacement of the code because over the past 15, 20 years, these small deputies have been inconsistent in chapters and in Baltimore. And so staff went out and requested a request for proposal for consultants to receive possibly 8 out of those 8 interviews before and they're going out. And their contract is attached to the bill. And we request that capital authorized mayor to sign.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to authorize the mayor to sign the consultant agreement with BHC Consultants, LLC, in an amount not to exceed $120,000 for the Unified Development Regulations Project and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action as shown in Agenda Bill Number 17-126. Councilmember, discussion. Councilmember Cutterback.
Ben, so the budget is 120 with a contingency of 20. That's the 140. But when I see in the fee schedule, it looks like the work really only totals 75, and then there's a reserve of 45.
Correct.
It just seems that's a
Correct. And so I did it that way because both myself and I've seen projects go south in the past because you give them up something. So
yeah.
If they disappear too quickly and do too much work, quickly they spend the money and you don't quite capture the vision of, say, the planning commission. And so I really narrowed the percentage amount that I spoke on that initial amount that I wanted to give.
That's the 75.
Correct.
Okay.
And then from there, we can still go out because right now we estimated out as staff, these are major things we need to do. However, if we get into an area such as, you know, design guidelines, for example, and the planning commission really has a lot of interest and we have to put a lot more effort into that section, then we have those funds and we can redirect the consultant with those funds and say, okay, now we can dive in, we need the pictures, we need additional regulations, we need homework, and coming back with basically a more robust chapter around design guidelines. We get the planning commission and they say, well, we just want a few items and they can address this and it's not a big deal. And then our process goes that way. Then we just end up with money left over. My guess is that we're gonna go down some paths that we're gonna have allocations. Not knowing what those are right now, I didn't specifically have to consult the justice.
Yeah, it just seems like when the work's 75 and the contingency 65, it just seems like a pretty big contingency for $75,000 worth of work.
Yeah, and it's something that, so the 20,000 initially off the top, I know that's basically going to put the city attorney and a lot of money for promotion.
Okay, so there's other costs besides what's here that this project is going to cost aren't...
Correct.
Here.
That's why I took that $20,000 appreciation right off the top and didn't even put it in that we sent out the results. Because I know that's just going to get burned up. I can't remember how much is the page this for the report.
Okay.
$27 a page.
Yeah.
And we're going to do hundreds of pages for publishing. Not to mention they're going to be doing a review for us and formatting. And then the city attorney had me burn some quite pretty quick. We want him involved.
Yeah.
I talk with them for about 2 hours as far as how we like the structure of the building.
Okay.
And get his feedback on it because we're going to have a lot of people involved early and throughout the process. They don't want to get him in, have this grand vision with the planning commission, and then also get the level on. And so yeah, that $20,000 is initially just based on the top. That's not going to cost us. That's basically internal things that we're going to do. City attorney, co-publishing. Mailings that we're going to be notifying the public of the we could roll those in with the overall budget, and I think some of that will be, but
okay.
That one doesn't make it for some. I have a feeling that it's a lot going to be.
Okay. And so do you foresee that this isn't just codifying, that's not a word.
Codified.
Thank you. but there might be substantial changes in the development design standards?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is, and I know I've been, people don't like this term, but rebuild replace. I mean, we're getting really close to commercial construction. And
okay.
So there's going to be, just from, I think I talked about this in the past, just my philosophy is, you know, why reinvent the wheel? So I think a lot of this stuff will be able to
Yeah.
We won't be then involved in too many projects where the goal is being creative and unique and don't be like anybody else. Neither that results in codes, just like someone else who spent all the necessary money or be involved in code that's difficult to administer and difficult to understand. And so we know some codes that have been worked well from a planning perspective.
Yeah.
They're easy for us to easy for us to implement. And so we'll be taking those two planning questions for the we're actually starting to do that. Of what do you think of this code? And so depending on how that process goes, if everything goes very smooth, we may come in with a budget on this project. My goal isn't to spend the money. However, I just anticipate, just like on any other coded things that are part of implementing and sure the plan, you run into those unscheduled desires or wants from people. We want more information on this, we want more detail on this. Again, another one that how this still goes. We're trying to intertwine some local plans for this as far as our analysis of our growth rates, because we really want our zoning to hit those targets and those growth rates. So depending on how much we can do in house, that may be something we have to come out to the consultants to take with some GIS for which can start adding some dollars. And so we don't know where that's going to go right now. That's why I really was strict on the scope of the consultants and exactly how much money I was going to allocate that way in that first half. Big reason is, like I said in the beginning, is I don't just want to be most spent.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we're stuck with something we don't want, and we're coming back to you requesting more money. So I really kind of am holding that on.
And when were the existing development regulations last looked at or adjusted?
Fully replaced.
Well, it seems like we've been looking at stuff for years. We're constantly, but that you're saying that's been piecemeal and you want to do it all at once.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it hasn't gone. It's probably been, I would say, early 2000s, maybe as far back as the 90s, for a full comprehensive look at. Because what we run into is with these approaches, we miss definitions or references. One that kind of came back and hit us was it had references to lot square footage and complex. Well, we don't have a lot. The building dimensions are greater now as opposed to lot size, so that's causing some confusion. But it's like that throughout the entire building. And so it's in a
Any other questions? Any other discussion? Seeing none, there is a motion on the table for the requested action that is, I'll just go ahead and restate. This is the requested action in Agenda Bill number 17-126 as typed. We'll go ahead and call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is new item business number 2. This is AB 17-127, authorized purchase of hardware software for electronic plan review. Mr. Swanson.
So over the past few months, both myself and Dr. Fowler have been discussing electronic plan review. And this is something that a lot of other jurisdictions do, and this would include, I don't want to confuse it with the online permitting system, which is much more expensive and much more detailed. What this would do is allow applicants to take their electronic files, typically updating a subdivision, for example, things that require developing GAP and then transfer over to PDF. It would allow them to take those plans and put them in FTP for the city to download. Once the city receives those files, we would use what's called moving review software to review those permits on the computer screen and how to print out those actual documents. And then from that, we could put those back on the computer and say, yeah, upload those, make those corrections basically electronically as opposed to paper. We could go back and forth in that process. When I was in some long the building department did pure electronic plan review, and the school district submitted a permit for a new high school. And estimated just in the building permit, it's saving over $63,000.
Well,
they estimate printing costs, delivery costs, just for one project. So this is going to have a benefit for the city staff and the applicants. We deal with consultants all over, down the curve and the pepper, and they have to run and deliver these plans. And just to get an idea of how this works and address some of this, and been doing it for about 8 years now, this is the same first round. And so let's go and ask them how they did it, ask them what their mistakes were, what they were. They did a process very similar to what we're doing. They didn't go out and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a common system. They did a TV site, and they upgraded some of their hardware as far as laptops, etc. to run the system, and invested in the even review software using the same system. And so so what this would do is take everything and put it online and be able to transfer back and forth. We would require some jurisdiction to require pure now. We wouldn't go that route. However, talking to Mr. Island, they said approximately 85% of all permits were people just actually grabbing it. And so we think this will get better. And so that's why we're requesting this budget. So we can start implementing it. Now it's how to figure out a process, how we're going to do it, shifting from paper to electronic, getting one of this year.
Okay. Councilmember Gimble.
So I totally get the cost savings and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't see in here, unless I missed it, where we were, you know, actually put a number to that. Where is we going to do?
Like how much is it? I didn't put an estimate in. I don't know, like, overall what the cost savings would be. I mean, definitely, pull some numbers off of it. Because what we have to do is essentially go through our plans right now, estimate the number of machines they are, multiply that, how much it is a common machine. I know the school district submitted for, last year and this year submitted for two major improvements. Total plans, that's what about this day. And those are 24 acres. And that's
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I'm looking for, right? So there's a hard cost savings, right? But then there's an efficiency savings that we're talking about. And I'm used to looking at something like this and saying, you know, I get it. I mean, if it's a one-time purchase and an annual recurring, I mean, there's a lot of us that, you know, that do this. It makes a lot of sense. But we probably should see, okay, where do we expect to see that, especially as we go into budget, right? Where do we expect to see that savings, right?
So are you looking for both the hard costs and then efficiencies?
Correct. Yeah, because then it makes, I mean, to me it seems like the right thing to do, right? But if you factor in those costs, it may be an absolute no-brainer, where this is an investment that just pays for itself.
Right.
You know, there's an ROI on this that we'll realize, you know, at the end of next year or whatever the case may be, between hard cost savings and efficiency savings.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Do you have anything to add? Did you want to add anything? Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
Do you need that before I make a motion?
This is the first reading, right?
Yeah.
No, this is this is authorizing the mayor to. To sign for a purchase. Mm-hmm. And the funding source for this is a technology fee fund.
Eventually, for the long term, it would be the funding source. Right now, is our one time.
Okay.
And then in the future, possibly.
Okay.
From a tech one, actually, I take that back. We aren't using one time delivery. We're using our permit fees, our tech fee that we put on each permit.
Yeah.
And so, what that was developed in 2006, maybe a little before that, and that was essentially designed for things like permitting software and anything that we need to use for technology. So those fees essentially kind of help pay for our upgrades.
Okay. And so then a follow-up question, is there a timeline on this? If this were put out 2 weeks, does that make a difference in terms of scheduling anything or purchasing?
No, there's no hard timeline on this. It's just the sewer will be on the sewer.
Okay.
What I would propose, I'm going to make a motion, but if I would be okay with this coming back as consent agenda with that information, maybe. That makes sense.
Is there if there's not a motion to approve, then what we'll do is we'll go ahead and have staff bring back some additional information, send that off to you, and we'll have it in the packets. If you're okay with it being on consent, we'll put it on consent. Otherwise, it can certainly be under another section of the agenda. Is there any heartburn to that course of action? Okay, cool. So we'll go ahead and bring this back in about 2 weeks. We'll get some additional information off to council, and thank you very much, Ben. I really appreciate this.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Next item on the agenda, we are at council member reports. So we'll start off with the council legislative affairs committee meeting. Council member Kim.
Certainly. Well, I could repeat everything we heard on the legislative report tonight, which I have heard twice, and I'm very happy with the work they've done. But I will forego that and just ask if there are, well, I don't know. Councilmember Cutterback?
No.
Okay. So let me check. Did any of the other members of the committee have anything they'd like to add?
I think it's been covered.
Yep. Good. Okay. I thought it was very well prepared and a very nice thing. So that's essentially it.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
No, I've done. I heard that the night out last week was fantastic. I missed it. I was coaching football. But I did want to bring up that we're actually using the baseball fields up at the high school for...
Oh, cool.
For football because of turf. Because of the turf, and I just it's been really nice. And then they have the lights on the softball field that we put, you know, the city a couple years ago when we put that $100,000 from the city towards. So that we'll be having football practice that we wouldn't have been able to have on turf without that investment. So that's been really neat to realize. And then, you know, obviously I think it's what next year once the middle school is complete, then we'll have an additional. We get the lake tie, and I mean it just. Just further shows that more investment, you know that we make there, the better those programs are, and it's just really good. So that's about it.
Okay, thank you. And I just stopped at the Legislative Affairs Committee. We have a couple other committee reports first, then we'll go back to going down the dais. So Snohomish County Tomorrow Steering Committee, Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
All right. Community Transit Board Directors Meeting, Councilmember Cutterback.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Snohomish Health District Board of Health Meeting, Councilmember Rasmussen.
I do have something to report. So Board of Health meeting today, pretty extensive. Went over, we're getting into budget season just like everyone else. The biggest thing is that probably, you can imagine listening to Brian earlier, we're anxiously anticipating waiting on a federal budget to come through as we get some of our funding through that. But then the state budget, of course, the health district got some. Unfortunately, didn't get all that we wanted or felt that we needed. Just to kind of give you an idea, in years past, Snohomish County, our health district's gotten $136,000 from the state for immunizations, just us, Snohomish County. With the recent state budget, they allocated $54,000 to be used across all health districts in the state. So huge, huge difference, and that's just kind of a minor, or I shouldn't say minor, but a small drop of what our staff is going to be dealing with when they put together the budget to bring forth to the board here in the next couple months. Quite a bit of the discussion that we had today was in regards to the Snohomish County Health District merger report done by Dave Gossett, the consultant. Earlier this year, we call it the Gossett Report, and he started interviewing board members, staff, community members back in November, delivered his report in May, and it was just to explore the idea of whether the health district should merge with the county. It's been an ongoing conversation for the last 2 years, and we've gone back and forth, and the exec's office finally said, you know what, we'll do a consultant and see from both sides whether it makes sense or not. Ultimately, what it came down to is that they're based off of the consultant's opinion, there really is no right way or wrong way. Some of the perceived benefits were also the very same as the perceived disadvantages of being a merger. So kind of look at that. It was interesting to read through the report, and it was in the packet that Liz emailed out, and then the summary I think is also in there. If not, I can get that to everyone. But at the end, it definitely called out some of the health district's inefficiencies and deficiencies. And when Mr. Gossett was going through his report and his presentation today, there were a lot of the points that he was pointing out. Myself and Councilmember Hilt from Lake Stevens, we both sit on the executive board together. We kind of had that, looked at each other and thought, well, we're already dealing with this. And by the end of the report, there was a handful of items that Mr. Gossett pointed out that health district is already tackling and we're already addressing. And a lot of it pertains to our governance and our efficiencies. And so the health district of today is a lot different than what it was 2 years ago because of the work of our leadership team. So we'll have continued conversations on that. Today the board made a point and a formal decision, I guess, to give our health district staff comfort that we were going to remain our own entity as a health district and move forward and address these matters and then keep going from there so that they don't have to worry about whether a merger is looming or not. And we were very glad to be able to put that to rest. So that is, possibly tomorrow is what I'm understanding is that the health district is going to release a point in count or point in time count for opioid overdoses study that was done last month, July 17th through the 23rd. Monroe wasn't one of the cities that was on the list, but it kind of gives a county snapshot of opioid use or overdoses, I should say. So be looking for that, and feel free to call me with any questions or call city district staff. And then the only thing, last thing I wanted to add on the in regards to the health district, last week, and unfortunately I wasn't able to make the ribbon cuttings because I was on vacation, but our drug expansion or drug take back expansion program that the board approved last year, we got numerous new drop boxes in, and the health district did a special ribbon cutting with one of the drop boxes in Edmonds. This is a great opportunity right now. I mean, previously you could go just to the police department, take back your prescription drugs, no questions asked, take them back, and they get disposed of. With this expanded program, because it's the onus is put back on, or a lot of the financial onus is put back on the pharmaceutical companies, we're able to provide more drop boxes and put them in convenient locations, such as our pharmacies, which is where you'd go to essentially pick up your prescription drugs anyway. And I went by PharmaSave and on Friday and checked out the box and where they've got it, and they've already had quite a bit of use out of it just in the week that they've had it. The nice thing is that it's a huge cost savings to our health district, but then also you can now safely dispose prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs. So it's a huge win for communities and also our health district. So if you see stuff about that, that's what it's about. And there's a report on the health district.
Thank you very much. All right, so we'll go ahead and continue back down the dais. Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. Yes, I attended the National Night Out, and it was packed. It gets bigger and bigger every year. And that's about the high point. Oh, yeah, there's one other thing I found. I have some flyers. I'll give this to the city clerk for an organization called Just Serve, which is an interactive way of finding out opportunities to serve your local community. And I told them I would mention it at City Council, and I have. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Councilmember Davis.
I also made the night out, and it was huge. I got there earlier than I usually do, and still couldn't find a place to park.
I know.
So, besides that, I had a blue snow cone, turned my lips blue, and looked kind of silly, but I enjoyed it. My youngest daughter went with me, so we had a good time, and it's a good time. It looked like everybody else was having a good time, too, so it was a success again.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
I was on vacation last week, so unfortunately I did miss National Night Out. First one in 6 years that I missed. So saw the pictures and heard all about it. Sounds like a lot of fun. Other than that, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Well, I seem to remember Councilmember Rasmussen challenging myself and Councilmember Camp. And so when I showed up at the National Night Out Against Crime,
Camp said no.
Deputy Chief Kennard can be my witness that Councilmember Rasmussen was on vacation, and then Councilmember Camp had to leave for a meeting. So it was just up to me, and unfortunately I couldn't get the photo to work of me and my two little kids on this one. So, but I persevered.
You persevered.
I'm glad you stood in line rather than just told the kids to get off.
Oh, there was no line. They all wanted cotton candy. So.
Oh, okay.
That's how you bribe them.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Sorry, I missed that. Yeah, it was a great event. Kudos to the police, Rotary, city staff, everyone who was involved. It was super hot. I don't know what numbers were. Do you guys know what the numbers of people there? They usually... Yeah, it's a big one. So, then my daughter took a tour of the police department last Thursday with her day camp staff, and she has, for the last 2 years, wanted to become an FBI agent. She is intent on being in the FBI. She has set that course. But she came back, and she said, I think I want to be a police officer first. So somehow she was inspired being there. And then this Saturday, there is Corks and Kegs. It is Monroe's first kind of beer and wine tasting festival. It is in front of Harry's on Ty Street. It is an event that the Chamber, Monroe Digital Copy, and Harry's is putting on, and they are donating proceeds to the Y and also to the Chamber. So only $25 for a ticket. 3 to 9 p.m. Bands. Three bands will be there. DJ, food trucks. So, hope people can make it.
Cool. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Always at the end of the line, so I can only echo all comments about the night out. Great turnout. My granddaughter sang the national anthem. Again, this is the second time she's done a couple of those. Always good to see family involved, but they were all there too, and it was hot. School District 2 was there with a bus, police department with all of their goodies, dogs, vehicles, etc. It's a good night out. Thanks for everybody's participation.
Thank you. So we've got a couple of reports from departments. First, the police update. Deputy Chief.
Good evening. The first thing on the agenda today for the police update is the community outreach program. I'll give you some numbers. Since April 1st, we have contacted 76 individuals from the because that's a transient. At the current time, we're dealing with 52 clients. We contacted them as often as we can find them out there. The success of this is that we've had one complete box. We've got two complete inpatient treatment. Three of the clients have set up and completed dependency assessments. Three are enrolled in housing programs with the two additional renewals for housing programs. Or have pending medical dependency assessments, and one of these mental services out of state. Another thing that the outreach has been doing is that they're working with the landowners or property managers of each park again. They were successful in locating them and talking to them about the eight individuals that have been pretty much living on their property. Care of that. Those individuals were trust housed out of the eight of them, two of them accepted services. All the camps on the property were removed on August 20th of the first by the property. I'm sure the chief is very proud of the fact that he was able to hire an officer who started yesterday. Very, very happy to have her on board. We anticipate that she will be going to the training after some time here or something in October. And the last thing is I'd like to thank the Rotary and city staff and everybody who worked out with the National Highway Estimate that we were proud. Started a little bit slow, but I think maybe because of the weather.
Yeah.
But really ended up strong. We estimated for about 2,500. Very successful event, great community involvement. It was very nice to see you. Do you have any questions about any of that?
I don't see any. Thank you very much. Councilmember Gamble.
Oh, just would be a comment on the efforts and the whole, I'm getting comments that there's definitely visible results as well, and I know it may not seem like, I mean, when you look, you know, through there, you know, hey, are we really making a dent or whatever, I would just offer up that that's like a third, 30% of those that you're in contact with, you're helping move forward in the process, so I would just commend those efforts as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Just one last
Deputy
comment,
Chief, you're still up.
That's okay. I want to echo what Councilmember Gamble said, because I walk a lot through the community and I go back in kind of those trails, and I go back behind Walmart and in the woods there with my pit bull, so I'm back there. But there was some graffiti, and I probably should have called the city. I don't know who deals with this, but graffiti just on the road back there, and also with really bad language and like a hate message on there, so I don't if that's something you guys look into, or
we will take a look into that, and we're starting to
yeah on well. And but it's got a not just plain graffiti, it's got a hate intent, and there was one on that barrier that was there that referred, I think, to police officers that got taken care of, and then there's something on the road back behind Walmart on that road back there that's blocked off, that
old 191st.
Yeah. So okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hate towards any particular.
All right. The next staff report that we have is from Public Works. Public Works update with Mr. Feilberg. Mr. Feilberg.
So I have lots of time. I'm going to read all 60 pages.
We're aware of them all.
A couple things. The county is scheduled once again to be out spraying their light stripes this Saturday and Sunday. They were supposed to do the last weekend, but they had some problems. So Oman Road is scheduled to be overlay Thursday night. Along with Sunday, the first one they're doing for the overlay program, and then get the front to the Lord after the triathlon and things like that are done, so we don't have that back up while they're trying to run on the bicycle on it. And then the other ones, we had a quarterly Department of Emergency Management advisory board meeting today, and with the way the federal budget is going, it looks like they're going to lose the majority of their income that comes from urban area security initiative grants and state homeland security program grants. And so we're talking about how to change the funding model, which would probably cause us to double our contribution to them for their contracted services. We have, so probably like $1,000 to $32,000 a year, somewhere around this. We're starting that process right now. We'll be working over the next few months. The current contract we have with them is good until the end of 2018, so this will be something that will come up in 2019.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. Councilmember Cutterback.
Brad, in the Fairfield Park,
yes.
That I know they started construction there, and I think it's supposed to be done next month, September. So the way that it's drawn, so there's going to be two entrances? Okay, so that other entrance that's currently there will be blocked off? Okay, and the other entrance, you really will be able to turn left and right?
Yes, that's the idea.
Okay.
It's supposed to be a temporary entrance, so we can do the field first year, and they're supposed to do it the second.
Okay.
We moved it out, and it just took them 9 years to get around to it. So it will be cross intersections so people can make left turns and things without breaking on the wrong side of the road.
Right.
Things like that.
Which probably isn't legal, but people do it. One other question or comment. As I was walking through Kelsey, or, you know, through the development, right in front of Frogs, it looks terrible. There's like that temporary fencing. It's on some of the frontage road on Turney. On Turney, through there, there's temporary fencing, and it's all kind of bent, and there's just weeds and grass, and I didn't know if that was city responsibility or if it was someone else's responsibility. It looks terrible, and it just is one of those things. I don't know whose job it is to take care of that, but wanted to bring that to attention. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll look into that. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Speaking of taking care of things, the planters on Highway 2, between Highway 2 and the Wells Fargo Bank, whose responsibility are they?
Jason property owner.
The Wells Fargo Bank? Anybody said anything to them about them not taking care of those three planter boxes? Should we? Because I've heard more people comment about how come they don't have to take care of that when everybody else is taking care of theirs. So I'll share that with you.
So we'll follow up on that too. Anything further for Mr. Feilberg in Public Works? All right, so we'll go ahead and go through the line and back. Pam, do you have anything from court? Okay. Mr. Worthen?
David's last meeting, I wanted to.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell.
Mayor, Council. A few things. First, I'll let you know that our crew finished and installed all the new furniture in downtown. So that's all.
That's awesome.
It was nice down there. I want to thank all of you for your initiative and the project, and also working with DMA. Downtown Borough Association to help us with selection of the type of furniture in there. And both the DMA and myself went out and reached out to different businesses along the downtown to do as well. So it's a really, really nice little project. And just want to tell you about some upcoming things. Events. This Friday we have Moody's theme, Lakeside Park, outdoor movie park we're going to do. And also this Saturday, from 8 a.m. to about 5 o'clock or 1 p.m. is the Lakeside Triathlon. There is a 20-mile on that event. Also on Saturday, as was great to see, is the Corks and Kegs event for areas on time. And the following Saturday, on the 19th, is the Wheels and that's that. I believe 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Post Fairfield. Last year was the first event.
Where was it at again?
First Airfield, right across from the fairgrounds.
Okay.
The airport. Also on the 19th is the, I believe it's every third Saturday of October, is another farmer's market by Park. So the hours of that are 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And last, I just want to update you that we received yesterday a report of somebody that they thought they had some swimmer's ditch at the time. We have contacted Snohomish County, our Snohomish Health District, and also Snohomish County Lakes Division for our standard policy when we receive a report from the public. City will follow up with further testing or signage as directed by the Snohomish Health Department or Snohomish Lakes Division. As you may know, you should know, is that the lake is monitored and tested monthly by the City of Monroe for dissolved oxygen and coliform organism levels on reading. Because we post this on our Facebook page and also on the website so that the public can get informed. Test results are within the allowed state of Washington standards. And if anybody has any further questions in regards to water quality lake, you know, in the beginning of the meeting of the presentation, we talked about the conservation district, which is long term with lake as well. Please contact our stormwater coordinator, Vince Bertrand, and his information also on the website and Facebook.
Thank you. Before we continue, Councilmember Scarborough.
I wanted to go back a little bit to Brad. On the Oak Street, says update, we're going to continue to try and do right away conversations with the owners, basically. Have we got any new progress on that?
We had a meeting with them, a very, I think, conciliatory meeting. They are going to, we asked them to provide us with a proposal as to what they are, would be looking for in terms of a long-term lease or purchase of that portion of their property that is on the existing Oak Street, and we've not received that yet from them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then we go to back to community development.
Nothing.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Hassert?
Nothing this evening, thanks.
Okay, Mr. Feilberg, anything further? Okay, Chief Quinzer.
Yes, according to the when you were up on the GLT, I haven't been up there for a while. Were there no trespassing signs still up?
Are you saying I was trespassing? are you trying to insinuate? Whoa.
You know, we can have that discussion afterwards.
Please. Sounds like a trap question.
No comment.
Sounds like a loaded question.
No comment.
JB.
Okay, anything further? Anything further, Chief? Okay, let's come on up here, and you'll see Monroe this week is there in your packets for your interest. And thank you very much for National Night Out. It was a great event, and let's go to the administrator.
I simply want to thank the city and the mayor and the council and staff for the opportunity to provide service over the last 7.5 months. This will be my last meeting on the 22nd. Well, if we cancel the 15th, if you have the 15th, the new city administrator will be here, and I think that will be very helpful to have your permanent person on board. I've been very much enjoyed the issues, the camaraderie, the people, the affiliation. All of it has been a positive experience for me, and everything excepting the commute. I was just going to say that is horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, not to end on a bad note, to end on an up note. It was a pleasure for me to be able to provide you with some service in the interim and to help with the transition. And I think you'll be very well served by your new city administrator.
Thank you. I was going to wait until you were done with the extended agenda, but since you you jumped in there first, it's been a real pleasure having you serve with us these last 7-8 months, and you have a very high degree of professionalism. I really appreciate the discernment that you make in making recommendations to me and coaching the staff, and it's been a real blessing and a really positive experience to have you with us these few months while we've been in transition. I do have a certificate for you that I'm going to provide to you, and I again thank you very much for your service to our community. So
very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we've got a bunch of lights, so we're not ready for the extended agenda yet.
No, I know.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Mosley, just so have appreciated the way you stepped right in and led with humility and yet with some wisdom and discernment, like the mayor said. So very appreciative of all that you've done. And I wish you the best moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Thank you. And enjoy the next few months of whatever you're going to do. And before you start getting back into the world next year.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Yeah. Councilmember Scarborough.
Well, being a new guy on the block, I've enjoyed your counsel and your patience and your help to educate me and everything I had questions about. Appreciate it, and hope you have a good time in your next retirement.
Thank you.
Be
maybe
available.
Maybe I'll succeed next time.
Join us. Thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. When I talked to Dave Osaki, I think he was leaving as you were about to come on board, and he told me, he said, Patsy, David Mosley, if you let him, he'll help everybody do a great job and make everybody better. So I think that everything that people said about your wisdom and just coming in and keeping things going and the transition, you did a great job. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, I echo everything that's been said, and again, you know, thank you for everything you've done and brought here, and just enjoy retirement again.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Thank you. It's always a, anytime you come into a temporary assignment or whatever, that's always an interesting position to be in, and you handled it beautifully. As everybody has already stated, discernment and the respect from staff and everything. I mean, just into it, had a ton of fun. It was very enjoyable.
Thank you.
You even knew when to slip in a little joke every once in a while, which I really appreciate, by the way.
Councilmember Davis.
So I'll take Councilmember Scarborough's line and say ditto. Whatever everybody else said, it's been said. But I appreciate the level of professionalism and working with you, and I wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. All right. Extended agenda, sir?
Extended agenda, there's a potential for cancellation of the 15th meeting, so I think the mayor would entertain a motion in that regard.
Do it.
Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I've moved to cancel the August 15th, 2017 meeting.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Camp and a second from Councilmember Hanford to cancel the August 15th council meeting. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0.
On the 22nd, so the next meeting will be on the 22nd, there will be a presentation of the oath of office to the new city administrator. This will be more of a ceremonial oath of office because she will actually have the oath of office on the morning of her first day here. The presentation also, we've had a request from the new Chief Administrative Officer, CAO, from the Evergreen Health Services, Renee Jensen, to come and make a presentation to the council and I think introduce herself. She's new to the position, and so that will be there. Several items on the consent agenda. Unfinished business will be a discussion of the mailbox, cluster mailboxes. There were some questions that the council asked staff to go back and look at, we'll be bringing that information back. And then there's the WAVE that has a telecommunication franchise with the city has been sold, and we've been working on the transfer of that franchise to the new owner, and that process will be before you on the 22nd as well.
And we'll also have the electronic document recording on the consent agenda as discussed this evening. All right. Thank you very much. I think that's it. However, we do have a need for an executive session this evening.
Yep.
This executive session is pricing of property, person to RCW 110, subsection 1, subsection C, for approximately 5 minutes, and there will be action to follow, if nothing else, to adjourn the meeting, but I do anticipate action to follow.
Okay.
So we are now in executive session for approximately 5 minutes. Okay, we are back in session. There's no further business required this evening. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay, a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.